Taking a look at the world of digital photography next. I'm Larry Mueller, really pleased to welcome back Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography at Western Technical College at La Crosse. His mixed media CD is called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's got a website as well. It's www.acpress.com. Really pleased to welcome Jack back, and certainly one of the things I know we want to talk about is winter photography. You have a question about it or a question about digital photography in general, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Jack, welcome back.
Yeah, happy new year and happy new camera to all the listeners out there who got one for Christmas.
You know, my wife and I bought one, a new digital camera to replace another digital camera for my mother-in-law. She's been having a lot of fun with it.
This is the time of year when people who got their first digital camera or maybe were given one for the first time, it's been about, 3 weeks now or so. Now they're really sitting there going, what is it? What am I? How do I do this? So all of a sudden, the classes at Technical College are filling up for February. You know, the order line is buzzing for the CD because everyone's sitting there going, wait, this is more than I thought it was.
Well, yeah, your CD would certainly be helpful in that regard.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, once again, and it's not your fault if you're confused. These cameras are more complicated than your point-and-shoot used to be because you have to do all the work. You know, you don't give the film to your processor, and they fix things for you. You have to take care of it yourself. So there's a learning curve. But once you get going on it, there's almost nothing you can't do once you know how to use the camera properly.
You know, and we've had some, at least in this part of this, in the southern part of the state, and I think it's been across the state in general, we've had some great opportunities for landscape scenes, the fog and the sort of the frost on the tree, hoarfrost on the trees, just wonderful opportunities. But it's kind of tough. It's a little tougher taking shots in the wintertime.
Yeah, we have in the La Crosse area, we've been having 12-degree mornings, and it has been absolutely astounding looking. I stuck a little page up on the website, and I actually took those pictures yesterday morning.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
That's my backyard. It's like a winter wonderland. But because the Earth is at a particular position, and I don't remember the physics of it now, but it doesn't matter, there's a lot more blue in the color, especially in the morning. Mm-hmm. And even the best digital camera with the with their automatic white balance, it'll look at that scene and it'll kind of go, huh? You know, this isn't supposed to happen. It's kind of like the sodium vapor lights in barns. You know, it just doesn't expect that much of one kind of color. And so frequently the pictures will come out looking much more blue than you want them to. In the old days of film, well, that sounds funny, but in the old days of film, we used to stick on kind of a pink filter to compensate for the blue and the color of this time of year. And so now what you can do is you can either try to adjust the camera, or if that fails, adjust the picture afterwards with your computer.
And you have some things up on your site.
Yeah, if you go to the site, acpress.com, and click on the red button that says Other AC Press Content, you'll see kind of a tabbed folder, and one says photography. If you click on that, you will then see a very short article on how to adjust for wintertime pictures. I think it says, there ain't no cure for the wintertime blues. but I was borrowing that from a rock song. But there's the same picture three times. And the first one is the straight picture I took yesterday morning. And there's a rabbit dashing across the screen, which came out blurred, but it was kind of cute. And then the second one, I did some color correction using software. And then the third one, I did even more so by adjusting the brightness and the gamma and the contrast to make it look a little snappier. You could probably even make it look more pure white if you wanted to, but that's really the way the scene looked yesterday morning.
Yeah, it's great. So it's at acpress.com.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you might try taking your camera off fully automatic so that you can adjust the white balance. You can actually adjust the white balance of your camera. You may find another setting, maybe even for fluorescent lights or something, that works better than leaving it on automatic. And also, many of these point-and-shoot cameras have scenes now, and one of them is called snow, and that may adjust it somewhat, but there's no guarantee it'll be perfect. So I think what you're going to end up doing is spending more time with your image editing program afterwards.
Well, let's take some calls. Rick in Lodi has a question for you, Jack. So sure. let's go to Rick.
Okay.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've taken pictures for a lot of years, but can you help me understand a little bit more about like depth of field? You take pictures of something like branches with frost, but then, you know, how everything else is out of focus, you know?
Right. And now, in the days of film cameras, creating things being out of focus to isolate the subject was actually easier than it is with a digital camera. It's got to do with the nature of the optics. All of the optics in digital cameras are smaller than they used to be on film cameras. They're a lot closer to like a movie camera or a video camera. And actually, with a typical point-and-shoot digital camera, it's more difficult to have something out of focus than it was with a film camera. So are you having trouble getting too much in focus or too little in focus?
Maybe too little. You know, we've got a K20 digital Pentax.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your case, what you probably would try to do to increase the depth of field is to use a smaller lens opening, since you can adjust that on your camera. As the lens opening gets smaller, as it goes from, say, F4 to F8 or F11, there's an optical phenomenon that occurs that increases the apparent depth of field, the area in front and behind the subject that's in focus. So you may want to switch over to the aperture priority mode of your camera and set the lens down to a smaller lens opening. You have to watch to make sure your shutter speed doesn't drop too slow, but that
right.
That will increase it.
Okay, so the smaller the
The greater the depth of field.
Yeah.
But you might want to go over, there's a website called dpreview.com.
Okay.
And they have got a glossary page there, which it says learn-glossary. It covers a lot of these topics, and you may want to give that a try. We also cover this in our CD as well, but, you know, for a quick look, take a look at that at DP Review. I was quite pleased with what they had there.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Yeah, usually the problem with most digital photography is that you're getting too much stuff in. You've got a beautiful picture of the hunting dog, and there's a dumpster behind you, and that thing is sharp as can be. And it's really hard not to get it sharp.
Let's turn to Tom in Milwaukee next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I got three questions. One's on, it kind of deals with the depth of field again. One's on a digital camera. Is the shutter a physical shutter or is it a digital shutter?
Let me answer that one first. It depends on the camera. There are a lot of higher-end cameras that essentially have a mechanical-type shutter or at least some kind of mechanism that exposes the sensor and then closes over it again. On your least expensive point-and-shoot cameras, really all that's happening is the shutter is energizing and de-energizing. And those are kind of fun because you can actually twist the camera or move the camera, and it will actually cause some really weird pictures to happen. So it depends on the camera.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, and is F64 still the smallest shutter setting?
Actually, no. I would be very surprised if you could find F64. Again, the entire optical system on digital cameras is smaller than traditional film cameras, and many... especially the point-and-shoot cameras, they won't get much smaller than F8 or F11 because, relatively speaking, that hole gets so tiny that then something called diffraction sets in and makes the pictures very, very soft-looking. So I would be very surprised to find F64 on most cameras.
Okay, even on a camera like a Canon, you know, Rebel?
You might find them on some of the lenses, but again, because especially if the lenses were made for digital photography only, they're starting to run into diffraction problems when they get down that far. It may be possible to put a film camera lens on that has that, but you're not going to find F64 as much as you used to.
Okay.
And again, all of this depth of field stuff is relative to the size of the optic, so you may find an equivalent depth of field at F8 or F11 that you were not able to get on a film camera at the same aperture.
Wow. Why is that?
It gets into optics I can't describe on the radio, but all the optical systems are smaller. This is why on movie cameras, in the old days of Super 8 movie cameras, there were fixed focus ones that seemed like everything was in focus all the time because the depth of field was so great. The entire optical train is smaller, and it's always called apparent depth of field. It's a really complicated topic, but if you were to Google it, there are entire books written on it. But on the digital cameras, it's easier to have more in focus, and it's more difficult to isolate the subject.
Okay. Well, looks like I got some reading.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Okay, I have another question. It's about using a flash.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taking pictures, and what I get is the subject in the frame,
mm-hmm.
and lit up, but it looks dark behind them. So how do I get a little bit of depth of field with the flash?
Well, you're talking about how far the flash light will carry.
Right.
Is the flash built into the camera, or is it one that is attached to the camera?
I've tried both.
Yeah. The answer is that the built-in flashes are pretty puny. They only go about 13 feet, just like the point-and-shoot used to on film cameras. As far as external flashes are concerned, if you want the flash to cover a longer distance, you can try increasing the ISO of the camera, but more likely you have to buy a bigger flash.
Okay, so increasing the ISO should...
That gives you a little more range, but professionals use these big flashes with power packs that really throw a long distance.
Yeah.
And that you may have to buy a bigger flash.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Here's an email from Kevin. What do you recommend as a digital camera for a person with arthritis in their hands? My mom would like to upgrade to a digital camera but has some arthritis in her hands and needs something with big buttons to operate and easy to shoot, aim and click.
In that situation, I people laugh at me when I talk about this, I still recommend a lot of the Kodak line because, number one, many of the Kodaks have image stabilization, which will help counteract any shake. And in most cases, the Kodaks have simplified menus and simplified buttons. And so for a person who's got a little trouble handling the camera, they're pretty fast handling cameras. So I would really look into a Kodak and maybe find one that has fewer choices, because I don't think you're going to be wanting to jump around menus pushing buttons repeatedly if you have arthritis.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack Socha, our guest today as we talk winter photography and digital photography in general. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking digital photography with Jack Socha today. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Sandy in Madison up next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for talking with me. Hi,
sure.
Jack. I have Nikon Coolpix S560, and I have problems taking photos of trees, things with sharp, skinny lines.
Hmm.
They show up broken, both on the photograph and on the screen when I'm shooting. I don't know much about the camera. I've had it about a year, and I just enjoy pointing and shooting, but I'm very disappointed when I try to take pictures of trees. And
Now let me back up on this one again. You say the photos appear broken. When you look at them on the computer screen and on the camera screen, is that what you're saying?
I don't know about the computer screen.
Okay, but on the camera, when you say broken, can you give me a better idea what you mean by that?
They're like broken lines, like a branch on a tree would be like dashes.
Now, there's a couple of things that could be going on. The camera, I don't know how many megapixels that thing is, but it may be that the display on the camera itself...
The camera pixels are 10.
10, okay. I was thinking it might be around that. Have you looked at the pictures on a computer screen?
No, I don't use computers.
Okay, have you looked at them?
My partner does, so
have
he
you
knows
them
how
as
to
a
do
print?
It.
Are the prints also broken up as well?
When you have them printed?
We haven't had any printed yet.
So the only place you've looked at them is on the screen of the camera itself?
Right.
Okay. what may be going on there, and I've seen this happen a few times, is that the preview screen on the back of the camera really isn't as high a resolution as maybe you'd like it to be. And if you look at the pictures on a computer screen or have a print made, you may discover that they're okay. So what I would suggest you do is take the card over to your friendly neighborhood laboratory and stick it in one of their kiosks and look at it on one of their screens and see if the pictures look okay. If they look broken up on that screen as well, then there may be a defect in the camera. But I think it's just the display screen on the back of the camera isn't really that great. That may be the problem.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try it. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks for calling, Sandy. And let's go to Michelle in Slinger. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. I have a Nikon Coolpix 4800, and most of the time my photographs are indoor social situations, and it seems like the flash is too hot. The subject's faces always seem so washed out. Even if someone is tan, for instance, they look like they're wearing kabuki makeup because their faces are so white.
Get the rice powder on their face, right? Yeah. There's a couple of things that could be going on. I'm not sure if your camera does this, but many of them do. There is a plus-minus exposure control, not only for regular pictures, but perhaps also for flash pictures. You may want to check that and see if it has accidentally been set to overexpose. Usually there's a plus-minus button that shows a plus and a minus, a little slash in between, someplace on the camera body. If it's not there, it's in the menu someplace. And if you accidentally have that set to overexpose, it may be overexposing the pictures. There may also be a similar setting for the flash, in which case that may be overexposed. And even if it isn't, you may try turning that one down. You may, in either case, try turning down that exposure to a little lower setting. The other thing you may want to check is you may be set for auto ISO, which is the sensitivity of the camera. You may try putting that on the manual setting and dropping that ISO down a little bit lower. When worst comes to worst, the other solution is take a little piece of tissue and tape it over the front of the camera where the flash is.
Oh.
I mean, that's the old mechanical way of doing it. But I would be looking at the electronics first to see if something is set wrong or if that flash can be turned down using the plus-minus exposure control.
Okay. Right. And another question. Okay. Is it possible on these digital cameras to fill flash in daylight?
Oh, yeah.
To make the flash go off in daylight?
Absolutely. There should be a button on your camera that has like a little flash symbol. And as you press that button, it'll toggle through several selections. There'll be kind of like the no smoking symbol, which turns the flash off. There'll be the red eye. There'll be the little lightning bolt with an A, which is the automatic, which is the default. And then there should be a lightning bolt with no A, which means it will fire the flash whether it needs it or not, which is sometimes called fill flash.
So that great.
That definitely great. Is there. I would be looking in your manual under flash modes, and you can see which ones they have available.
Excellent. Okay. Right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Joanne in Eau Claire is looking for a new digital camera, Jack. She mm-hmm. needs more megapixels, she says. I want a super sharp picture. My film camera still produces the best photos. What's your opinion of the Nikon P90? What camera would you recommend in the $300 to $400 range? I don't need movie mode as I have a camcorder.
Yeah, the movie mode is one of those optional extras that a lot of folks never even touch. A lot of questions, they say the pictures are not sharp enough. I really have to ask what you're shooting. Many times people are trying to shoot action shots indoors and they're getting camera shake or subject movement because nowadays most cameras that are 10 megapixels or more, and the average now is 12, and I'm seeing 13 and 14. The lenses are pretty darn good. If you're getting pictures that are not sharp enough for you, I would be looking into your shooting technique. I would also be checking to see how much you're cropping, because a lot of people are shooting 10 megapixel pictures, and they're cropping away half the picture or throwing it away, which gives them the equivalent of a 5 megapixel picture. Any of the current brand names, we're talking Nikon, Kodak, Sony, you name it, Panasonic, Lumix, these are all capable of extremely high quality
Canon,
work these days.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious as to, I'd have to know more about what you're shooting and how you're shooting it before I could tell you for sure that a new camera is what you need.
And Mary from Cedarburg wonders, she said, I would like to scan my negatives to burn to disk for an additional backup of my photos. Any ideas there? Also, are there classes out there to help me understand my digital SLR camera besides just trying to understand the owner's manual?
Well, I'll put in a couple of plugs now. Number one, we do publish a CD called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And many, many of the questions that we get on the show here are really about the basics of photography and how to use the controls on the camera. And that's what the CD handles. Many times, technical colleges have evening weekend classes. In La Crosse, there's a local camera store that is now offering some more advanced free tutorials for SLR users. So if you have a camera store in your area, they may be doing the same thing. And there are plenty of online tutorials at places like Steve's Digicams or this DP Review. But you have to sit down and basically read your manual and ask questions and go to your local camera store, a real full-service camera store, and don't be afraid to sit there for an hour on a Saturday morning shooting the breeze with the other photographers. You may pick up a lot of information.
What about scanning those negatives to burn to disk?
It's a wonderful idea. No matter which way you do it, it's time-consuming. Now, you can go out and spend $300 for a beautiful scanner, which I would recommend if you're going to be doing it for serious reproduction, or you can go spend $50 for what amounts to a little 5-megapixel copy camera that will reshoot the negative. In either case, it's going to take you 3 to 4 minutes to do each one. And so there's no thing where you can drop all your negatives into a slot and it does all the work for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's turn to Phil in Golden Lake. Hi, Phil. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I went on your site, found that Blue Winter article, and they could have been shots I took last week down here in the Middle Moraine Forest. And I manipulated them the same way, so I was pretty pleased with that. At least I got something together on that. But I got a couple of questions for you on things that I kind of miss now that I've been doing digital for the last decade. One of them is extremely wide angle lenses. Now, am I correct that like when I'm on that dpdpdpreview.com site,
mm-hmm.
and they say Cortina announces Voigtlander 12 millimeter lens. Now, is that 12 millimeter lens, is that the equivalent of the old 24 millimeter?
Yeah, that what we're talking about here is that there are certain digital cameras that have removable lenses, and the challenge has been to make wider angle lenses for digital cameras because, as I said before, the entire optical system of all these digital cameras is smaller than 35 millimeter, and because of that, it's a lot easier to make a telephoto lens mechanically than it is to make a super wide angle. It's just like you're dealing with a little tiny miniature spy camera. It's really hard to make super wide angle lenses. And so you have to be very careful when you're looking at the specifications, whether they're speccing out the lenses in the equivalent of a 35 millimeter or in digital speak, as it were. And the other thing is that there are really no good add-on lenses you can stick on the front of your existing lens to make it super wide. They'll always do distortion. So, yeah, if you want to do super wide-angle stuff with digital cameras, you almost have to get an SLR or removable lens camera, and it will cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that $900 price tag on
it. Yeah, it's a lot. You know, and I always suggest to people that maybe you should just try taking several steps backwards. That's a lot cheaper, if possible.
All right.
My question about is about using filters. It's something I'm really missing, and I just have the feeling that no matter how much manipulation you can do afterwards, it's not replacing the old polarizing filter, enhancing filter, the green filter for black and white, because you're manipulating it afterwards, but with those filters, like what you're getting into the camera in the first place is much better.
Yeah.
No. This fall, I just took. I've got one of these little Lumix point and shooters now, and I just took my old polarizing and enhancing filter out with me, and you know, rotated by hand in front of the lens, and the photos I got were fantastic, and I didn't have to manipulate them at all. So,
you are correct.
I see so many cameras now; they don't even have the capability of putting filters on them. Are there any that? I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah. No. For one thing, the one filter that cannot be duplicated digitally is the polarizing filter. A polarizing filter eliminates glare and reflections, and there's no way that you can digitally with a computer do that. And so if you have a camera that accepts filters, you have to buy what's known as a circular polarizer, but they can do wonders with skies and water and glare on cars and all kinds of things. Everything else, the problem is that when you try to stick a filter on the front of your camera, your automatic white balance is going to try to compensate for that filter. So you have to turn that off if you're going to play that game with other filters. But in most cases, almost anything that you could do with a regular color-correcting filter can now be done with software, with the exception of the polarizing. So using the polarizing is exactly the right thing to do.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Stephen in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, I'm an amateur photographer, and I love my SLR to death, but I'm looking for a semi-waterproof point-and-shoot camera to take with me while I'm whitewater kayaking, something that I can put in my PSD, and I don't have to search through a dry bag and tear it out of the boat and use up a whole lot of time. Now, I've done a whole lot of research looking at reviews, and I've pretty much come back to the Canon D10, which is their waterproof point-and-shoot. I'm just wondering your opinion on that camera, if you ever had any experience or worked with it.
I've never used any underwater cameras. The nice thing about the digital ones is that there's less stuff to have to open up. And, of course, Canon has got a very good reputation. All waterproof or water-resistant cameras use seals and O-rings, and the trick is you have to keep those things scrupulously clean and free of salt and sand, or else they aren't waterproof anymore. So with the digital, the main areas that they have to seal up, you know, that are opened and closed are the battery compartment and where you put the card in, and aside from that, everything else is pretty much permanently sealed. So you should get some pretty good results as far as longevity out of a digital waterproof camera versus a film one. Canon would be very difficult to compete with, but other companies have got theirs as well. They certainly have got a good reputation. I have not used one, but again, your choices are a little bit easier because there's less stuff that has to be opened and closed. On film cameras, boy, that whole back of the camera had to open up.
Yeah.
And if you didn't keep it properly sealed and moistened up with the lubricant, you were in trouble.
Yeah. There you have it. Thank you very much, Stephen, for calling. Gabrielle says, I need to buy a digital camera to take a decent close-up photos of art and toys I make to show display options. Shots would probably not be more than 1.5 feet by 1.5 feet in that area. I have Photoshop. We'll be able to edit and color correct photos. What's the best brand and bang for the buck for $100 or less?
If you can find really almost any camera on the market, point and shoot, or we'll easily take a picture in that range. I have been very happy recently with the Panasonic Lumix line, and for a variety of reasons, they frequently are on sale for like $89.
Oh.
I would also suggest to you that there are some Kodaks out there that will also do a good job. You're not challenging too much as far as the camera is concerned. I would be shooting available light with no flash because you're not going to have reflections on your artwork. Get a tripod and really just find one at a price you can afford and the controls that you like. You might look into one where you can swing the screen out and tilt it up to make it easier to look at the picture while you're composing it. But aside from that, you're in the catbird seat as far as that's concerned.
Okay, and shooting tabletop pictures just in general, or are there anything else that you'd add to that?
All these cameras have got what they call a macro mode, which focuses down close. It's just a piece of cake these days. I mean, I have an eBay class I teach, and I'm always shooting close-ups of little items for eBay, and there's not a camera I have that doesn't work.
All right. Yeah. Jerry in Grafton, it's your turn now. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a Nikon D80 with two lenses. And it's been working out fine, and I've been waiting to try to shoot scenics of running water or moving water, so you get this old sand kind of look of it instead of freezing the water.
Right.
Now, in the program mode, I can only get my ISO down to 100.
Okay.
And I can only stop down to F22.
Okay.
Do it?
Well, I think you probably would get better results. Your camera also has shutter priority and aperture priority.
But then you can't choose the ISO.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you can choose the ISOs independently on each of those modes.
Oh, okay.
And so I would select a slow ISO, and I would go to shutter priority, and I would pick a slow shutter speed, and then take it from there. Yeah.
I wasn't aware that when evidently I read it wrong, and when I experimented with it, I wasn't aware I could set ISO in the shutter.
Oh yeah. You definitely
mode.
Can. Yeah.
So then I can go down to ISO 64 in 2 seconds if I want to.
You got it.
All right.
Okay. By the way, that fellow who called earlier just about an underwater camera, I have a 1030 SW Olympus that is rated for 30 feet underwater, although I've never taken it there. I carry it around outdoors in all weather, and I've never had any problem with it. I had it for about 2 years now.
Oh, great. Thank you for the advice.
Thanks a lot for calling. Another piece of advice, someone called in and said the woman with the lines in her picture, she may not have removed the protective adhesive to the display area.
That's a possibility. The other thing that occurred to me later on, too, is that these cameras have different compression quality settings, and if by chance the pictures are set for a low resolution and a high compression, there may be so-called artifacts showing up in those pictures. There's so much little stuff you have to check on all these cameras. They will do marvelous things, but you need to really, number one, look at the manual. But even more than that, if you haven't grown up playing with film cameras that have adjustments to them, you should go online or purchase a book on basic photography, what f-stops are, what shutter speeds are, what ISOs are, because I'm sure there's people hearing us talk about shooting running water at a low ISO with a slow shutter speed, and they're going, huh? And if you spend some time learning the basics of the physics of photography, which really hasn't changed, you'll understand more of what your camera can and cannot do.
Let's turn to Nancy in Wabasha, Minnesota. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jack.
Hi there.
I was also trying to take some pictures yesterday of the beautiful hoarfrost on the trees behind our house, and I did not want flash. And when I tried to regulate that, the display on the top of my Minolta showed nothing, and I can't get it to show me what mode it's in either, whether it's close up or night. Well, it does show nighttime, but not any of the others.
So your display is, when you push the button to toggle the different things you're supposed to see, they're just not showing up at all?
I do get a battery power sign, and I do get the number, or part of the number, down in the right-hand corner, and that's about it.
It sounds like your liquid crystal display, there's a little ribbon inside that connects that, has somehow gotten loose. It's also possible that the extreme cold may have affected the display. It may come back again when it warms up. How old is the camera?
It's quite old. It's a 4 megapixel.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it could be that the liquid crystal in the liquid crystal display has just died.
Oh, so that means a new camera, or is it replaced?
It would be.
No,
they
cheaper
are
to get a new one.
Repair, yeah, I'm afraid.
Okay, well,
but the good
I was
news is the new ones are cheaper than the one you had before.
Yeah,
okay.
You can get a pretty good one for under $100. Thank you very much. And we have Ralph in Minocqua says he has a 2 or 3 year old Canon PowerShot A510 with AA batteries. He says, I prefer using AA batteries so I don't have to remember to recharge the other set. But I recently had a problem with a short battery life in our cold weather. I thought generic alkalines were a good even in cold weather, but now find out that may be incorrect. What do you recommend?
Yeah, well, the problem is that all chemical activity inside of any battery
your car or your Walkman or your camera, when it gets freezing cold, slows down. So the best thing to do is to carry an extra set in your shirt pocket, keeping them warm, and then change them back and forth as things slow down.
All right, that makes some sense. Yeah. Mike in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Oh, hi. Hello?
Yes, hello?
Oh, yeah, okay, thank you. I just got back in the car. First off, I had a question for professionals who have switched to digital. And I've been using digital for a couple of years. Is there a publication out there that can help with, setting white balance and just getting into that? I got a Nikon D700. And there's a lot more features on there than I was used to with the D70. The other thing I wanted to just mention was, if it wasn't Olympus, there's also a Casio. It's either Olympus or Casio that has two cameras out that they're little point and shoots, and you can drop them from 5 or 6 feet and they won't break. They're shock resistant, and in addition to that, they are waterproof. You can. I saw somebody who had taken pictures underwater up to 10 feet for one, and then deeper for the more expensive one. And I think they're both around $300. So it's a relatively small portable camera for a kayaker or a backpacker, and can take a bit of abuse.
Yeah, I think the word to look for if you do a search for these things on the internet is ruggedized. They have been ruggedized, and they will cost quite a bit more than the same camera would have if it wasn't. But if you are going to be kayaking or rock climbing or whatever, and you drop the thing, it won't break. So that's not a bad idea. As far as getting more advice on using your particular camera, what you might consider doing is doing a search on the internet for your particular model camera and the word forum. And see if there is a forum of people who are users of your camera. Then you can exchange ideas back and forth. And again, white balance and those things are something that are unique to digital cameras, but they've been around for about 10 years. So if you go to one of these websites where they have some how-to stuff, they can give you some information on that.
All right.
But I would look for a forum for your particular model of camera. You probably find 100 photographers chewing the fat.
All right. Good. Okay. Thank you very much for calling. And Jack, thank you so much. It's a great 45 minutes, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Anytime. And one last thing real quick, when you're out there in the freezing cold, before you bring your camera in the hot, humid house, put it in a Ziploc bag and let it come to room temperature, because you don't want the moisture condensing on the inside of the camera.
Ah, very good tip to end the program. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
And Jack, go to his website. He's got lots of tips and great information at acpress.com. It's acpress.com. And he also has that mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, Jack Socha, Spring Grove, Minnesota. Always fun to have him with us. He knows a lot, doesn't he? We'll have him back and we'll talk again about we'll talk about photography in general. But next, we're going to talk about a great subject for photographers are our wetlands, because our wetlands are really beautiful. I had a chance to be in the wetlands a little bit this winter and saw some really remarkable. I mean, it's just beautiful. And we'll be talking about Wisconsin wetlands. There's a conference coming up called Wisconsin Wetlands and Service. We'll talk about wetlands and climate change with our two guests coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.